The Dr. Tracy Show, your integrated health expert. Here to help when you log on to peaksofhealth.com. Peaksofhealth.com.
That's right, peaksofhealth.com. Check out that website, because when you hear that, you know it's time for the Dr. Tracy Show. Dr. Tracy sitting in today with myself, Aaron Jacobson. Dr. Tracy, did you have a good week?
Yeah, it was a good week. It was really crazy busy, but it was good.
Good, good. And joining us today, we've had her before, and we're glad to have her again. She was a fantastic guest. Dr. Betty Wedman, we like to call her Dr. Betty, clinical nutritionist. Dr. Betty, thank you for coming in again.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Hey, guys, I hope you all had a great week as well. Check out the website, peaksofhealth.com. Learn more about Dr. Tracy. This is the Dr. Tracy Show, and she treats different areas such as hormone therapy, thyroid, diabetes, environmental toxins. We've gotten into all of it, Lyme disease, weight loss, chronic fatigue. She hits on it all, so make sure to give her a call. You'll get a free 15-minute consultation, and give them a call, 727-826-0838. And today we're going to talk about something interesting, gut health, and the theme. The theme today has been spoon-fed to me, and it's going to be the theme for the whole day, critters in our stomach. Why did we say critters in our stomach, Dr. Tracy?
Well, I was trying to explain to Aaron exactly the microbiome and the organisms in our gut. So Dr. Betty and I were talking about it. And so we were talking about, you know, how many organisms are actually in our digestive tract.
Yes, you have more organisms in your digestive tract that total about 3 to 4 pounds. Then you do cells in your body.
I think she wanted to scare me this today, because I said to her, I said, what are we going to be talking about with gut health? And what does that mean? And she said, critters in your stomach. And yes, she knows that would relate to me.
Well, I had to explain it in terms you would understand.
Well, one of the things that we really need to think about is what we call biofilms. And some people can identify with the biofilm by, that's the coating on your teeth when you wake up in the morning. And that biofilm really goes throughout the entire digestive tract.
Just what you have on your teeth in the morning?
Oh, it starts out there.
Okay.
And then goes all the way to the anus.
And what? How do you prevent this from building up? Or what
is... You eat properly, and you take probiotics, and you make sure that you have regular bowel movements.
So if you wake up and you have all this extra gook on your teeth, you're not eating correctly. Is that what you're saying?
You need to modify your diet.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things people don't realize, you know, biofilms are the ways that our body or some of these organisms protect themselves against our immune system. So when we're talking about, you know, a lot of the gut infections, like yeast overgrowths in the digestive tract, they create these films. I kind of talk about it to patients, like if you pull off duct tape and you see that goo underneath, that's kind of similar to a biofilm. It's the leftover residue type thing, but it surrounds us. You can't get it off.
You always love to build that perfect picture, Dr. Tracy.
You can't get it off. You got to use Goo Gone.
Well, but another form of biofilm is cataracts, the blurriness that build up on your eye. That's a biofilm, and that's from poor diet, incorrect diet for eye health.
Now, biofilm that builds up on something like your teeth is something that builds up overnight, whereas the cataracts is something I assume builds up over a period of time.
Over years.
Yeah. Well, you think about your teeth, you brush that biofilm off every day. But on your eyes, you're not doing that. And, you know, again, that's also one of the reasons why diabetics have such a high risk of cataracts, because they have a, you know, a diet that is high, you know, their blood sugars are high, and that affects the eyes.
How do you reverse that? When you get a cataract, is there a way, if you just eat better?
Oh, yes. If you have more vitamin C in your diet, we've shown that with research for over 25 years. But there again, it goes to the food choices, making sure that you have those good, healthy food choices, because it all starts in the gut.
Are there certain foods that are good for your eyes specifically?
Yes.
Can we talk about those?
Well, we've always known carrots with carotene. You know, the beta carotene in carrots, you know, so they always thought if you eat carrots, they're really good for your eyes, but it's mainly the beta carotene that are in those carrots. So, you know, the vitamin A's, you know, anything that's high in antioxidants, astaxanthin that we already talked about, bilberry, there are high antioxidants for the eye. And again, vitamin C, we actually do an IV for the eyes with high dose vitamin C, you know, because again, when we talked about IVs previously, you get 100% of that nutrition in there. And if you already have have a poor digestive tract, which we're talking about gut health, you're not going to absorb a fraction of what you normally take in. So again, you have a bad absorbency issue. If you don't have proper bacteria in that gut, then you're not going to break your food down and absorb it properly.
And you guys do at Peaks of Health, you guys do that IV therapy there.
Exactly.
Yes, IV is right into the bloodstream, so it doesn't have to go through the digestive tract. So we get much better absorption of those nutrients, particularly the zinc, the selenium, magnesium, things of that nature that are very important, along with the vitamin C.
The zinc, stuff like that, where can you find, in what food can you find those components?
Animal protein is your major source of zinc. And selenium, you have 5 Brazil nuts equals your daily selenium requirement.
And we've talked about that before, where nuts are very important.
Yeah, and it does depend on which nuts for that particular instance. It's the Brazil nut that has high selenium. But, you know, when you think about what our vegetarians, you know, they are deficient in certain nutrients because in certain things, your higher sources are going to be your protein, meat products. So we have to make sure we supplement their diets. You know, and when we're talking about gut health, we have to make sure they have the proper bacteria and the relationship of those bacteria in their digestive tract in order to absorb their food properly, because this is what helps us digest and break our food down properly.
And the United States is waking up to probiotics. I mean, we're 10 years behind the Japanese. So with probiotics, we're looking at, you know, choosing from a variety now. Not all of them need refrigeration, but there are different types of bacteria combinations that should be personalized to what the problem is for that person.
Now, Betty, let's go over what exactly is a probiotic for the public that may not understand what it is.
A probiotic is, a living organism that, is usually a lactobacillus. People are familiar with that from, yogurt or from kefir. And then it can also be a bifidobacteria, which is resides within the GI tract. And that comes from aged cheeses predominantly.
Yeah, and these are the organisms that are in our digestive tracts to help us break down our food products. Most people don't realize that these organisms are our critters, are supposed to help us actually digest food properly and absorb our nutrients properly. Our gut can't really do that on its own.
Correct. And one of the biggest things that you have is we have some good yeast and we have some bad yeast, just like we got good bacteria and we have bad bacteria.
So what happens to that digestive tract when they have a lot of the bad bacteria, so to speak?
Well, then we get into IBS.
Yeah.
Or irritable bowel syndrome. And so they got
a great conversation, by the way.
Oh, yes. Lots of gas and bloatiness, and you look 3 months pregnant after you've just eaten the wrong food. That really is a problem for many people.
Yeah, one of the things that we can do at the office that most people cannot do, we can do an actual comprehensive digestive stool analysis, which we talk about. And that actually will give us the actual information we need in order to diagnose what's going on in that intestinal tract.
Well, one of the things also, let's say they don't like to collect stool. I will tell them the best thing for them to do is to get what we call a urine organics comprehensive test, because that way we get a good idea of, is this a bacteria problem or is this a fungal problem? And then we can make them collect a stool sample.
If you're just joining us on the Dr. Tracy Show, we have Dr. Betty Wedman, and again, we like to call her Dr. Betty, clinical nutritionist on the Dr. Tracy Show, talking with Dr. Tracy right now, talking about gut health. And what is urine organics? What is this?
It's where you collect first morning pee. And we have a lot of bacteria that give off enzymes during the night and that tell us if the bad guys are overgrown.
Yeah, and I can totally sympathize with patients not wanting to do stool testing. I actually, there's not a test that we do at the office that I won't do myself first to see what it is. It took me 3 weeks to get the nerve up to poop in order to get that sample out. So I can completely sympathize with my patients when I ask them to do that test.
I don't mind getting the sample. I feel bad for the person I have to give it to.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm so sorry.
Especially our lab tech who has to check all the bottles and everything to make sure they're good.
Well, that's why I had to throw in the organics, because there are other ways of finding out what's happening in the GI tract.
So, and that it becomes unbelievably important for our patients, because we have so many patients that they're chronically fatigued. They have irritable bowel syndrome. They don't know why. They've had colonoscopies or endoscopies, and we have so many different things that it can be. And, just off the top of the list, you can't usually just diagnose them without looking at some of the information that we get.
And many of them get put on medications, like a cortisone type of medication, which calms everything down. But then we have to start by retraining the gut.
Yeah. And one of the things I found about the gut, you know, let's talk about gut inflammation, because this is, again, inflammation is the hallmark of all disease. And a lot of times it happens in the intestinal tract.
But yeah, we have to start really with the mouth, because people don't chew their food and they eat too fast.
I'm the worst.
I'm accused of that all the time. Having been now, although in all honesty, I was in the ER for 18 years. You don't get to eat very slowly.
Yes, you got to eat and get out.
And so if you're going to get the nutrition out of your food, you're going to have to chew it well. And that's a problem, because in one of my biggest biochemistry labs was on nuts. And the instructor said, you know, people who take two bites of a nut and swallow, they are not getting the nutrition from that nut, because there are no teeth in your stomach or your digestive tract.
Zena, I know it sounds like a dumb question, but how do you know if you're not chewing your food properly?
Well, usually you have a lot of gas and a lot of bloating, and you don't get good nutrition. You can show up with little white dots in your fingernails.
So there are ways to figure this
That's
out.
That's me looking at my fingernails. I'll tell you one of the secrets that I've learned how to do, you know, because I have tried everything. I've tried counting 30 times to chew my food. I've tried putting my fork down. I tried having my conversation. It lasts for like a day. I've just started cutting my food up to the size of what my daughter's is, you know, when she was a baby. So at least then it's small bites going in instead of these large chunks.
Well, the other thing is that that's why digestive enzymes are more commonly used, because you didn't chew it as well, so you pop a digestive enzyme that, you know, does help break a little bit down in the stomach.
Always an interesting conversation with Dr. Betty's in studio, and we love her for it. Hey guys, check out the website, peaksofhealth.com. Great website. All the information's on there. On the Dr. Tracy Show right now, Aaron Jacobson with Dr. Tracy. And the theme of the day, critters in our stomach. More on critters in our stomach next. A great afternoon always in the studio when Dr. Tracy's here, and Dr. Betty always adding a little bit of flavor, a lot of flavor actually, and not just the spices that we're talking about before weeks ago from healing. Dr. Betty has some great information on clinical nutrition, and she's in studio with us once again. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you, Aaron. Good to be here.
Talking about gut health today, and I'll say it once again, critters in the stomach, and we were talking about probiotics earlier, and let's start with this, Dr. Betty. Where can you get the right probiotics?
Well, most of the probiotics really need a lot of special attention when you go to looking at purchasing them. So they're usually in the refrigerated section. There are a few that do not require refrigeration, but you need to make sure that your supplier is reputable and that they actually have tested they have viable probiotics within that product. The Consumer Reports had done a report, and you'd be surprised how many of the products that they tested were not really viable bacteria.
Yeah, when we're talking about probiotics, I mean, it is so many of them out there, and how to choose a proper probiotic for the person who's listening, you know, because you have lactobacillus species, you have bifidobacter species, we have saccharomyces that we like to have in our probiotics in many cases. You know, how would they go about, because, you know, we use different probiotics for different reasons. So, you know, I have a hard time telling a patient how they would choose their probiotic over the counter, you know, because we do such due diligence in finding the specific one that works for our patient for that reason that they need it for.
Well, one of the things that I like to tell people is it's really now gotten to be a probiotic numbers game. And that, oh, not 10 billion, not 20 billion, but 50 billion or 100 billion. And do not make your purchase based on that number. That's important to consider. The other thing is that, you know, yes, specific probiotics for specific disorders, particularly a Crohn's disease patient has a specific need for certain probiotics. When a person who has just IBS has another, a person who has candida definitely needs to make sure that they have some Saccharomyces boulardii. Even though
Saccharomyces? What is this?
That's a good yeast. So
okay, so we're talking about yeast now,
right?
Okay,
and so Saccharomyces. You know, you say, oh well, you have to put a good yeast, but then you have to explain that good yeast fights out the candida bad yeast.
Can we talk about yeast? Because when I hear yeast, I immediately just think of bread, and that's where it cuts off elaborate more. Where do we go further from there?
Well, candida is a sort, you know, is in the fungal family, you know, of infections. And a lot of people have what we call yeast overgrowths in their intestinal tract. And this can be very damaging to the intestinal tract and actually, you know, split the junctures and cause what we call leaky gut syndrome. It can release a lot of toxins into the body. So a lot of people can just get sick from a yeast overgrowth in their body. And we have a tendency to do this with the American diet. It's high in sugar. That's what yeast feed off of. So when we eat those breads that have a lot of yeast in them and with sugars, they have a tendency to overgrow. When we take all these antacids that block out acid in our stomach, acid is what helps kill yeast. So it's one of those things that, you know, a large percentage of our patients that come in that are tired, bloated, IBS, they have candidal. Candida is the actual typical species that we talk about of yeast. Candidal albicans is the actual technical. But that they have an overgrowth of this. They have too much.
Yeah, prime example is they can buy a package of strawberries or blueberries and not realize that if there's one moldy berry in there, that entire container is molded.
So you don't just take that one out and pick around
it?
You got to get rid of it.
Yeast is has little villi that fill the entire box.
Listen up. I know you're out there and you had that one little moldy fruit and you got rid of it and you kept the rest of the fruit. You can't do that. Dr. Betty said you got to get rid of all of them.
And that's what leads to the growth in the GI tract.
What are some good yeasts?
Well, Saccharomyces is a good one,
yeast. Okay.
And that's why, you know, we want it to take the place of some of the candida bad yeast. Uh-huh. And then we have at least, you know, four or five different types of candida, not just candida albicans. And some of those have never been studied because the traditional medical community doesn't really believe that we should be treating yeast at all.
Is there a specific reason for that?
Oh, we're all going to die of yeast, and we all have yeast growth, so why should you worry?
Inevitable,
about it?
Right?
Yeah. You know, we just forget about some of the damage that it causes us in the process.
And people don't realize that a headache and things like that, poor mood, poor sleep, can all be, you know, yeast from your gut that's creating those problems.
Yeah. And I mean, as I said, most of the time we actually look at these people, you know, the first thing I always look at is their intestinal tract when they first come in, because it is the hallmark of so much disease. It is 70% of our immune system. So, you know, again, that plays a huge role in a lot of our patients that are sick when they don't digest a food right, they're having malabsorptive syndromes, and they have all of these autoimmune issues going on.
And so they really need a probiotic. Lactobacillus is not the answer.
What is that?
That's the bacteria in yogurt or in buttermilk is lactobacillus.
Is that something I hear lax and I hear laxative? Is that
coming from dairy products?
Okay.
But that does not live in your GI tract. It just changes the pH or the acidity level in your gut. So the bifidobacteria, which is the other part of that probiotic, that's the guy who takes up residence, and that's the one that you want to have a lot more of.
Now let's talk about, you know, some of the things that also we find in probiotics is prebiotic. And a lot of people don't know what a prebiotic is and what it does.
Well, prebiotic is usually something that can make the probiotic grow better in your GI tract. And that can be, you know, a fiber source, an oligosaccharide. You'll see that long label on there. And that's a fiber from, you know, different plant products.
Mm-hmm. And other things you may hear is chicory, inulin, or some of the code words that we see, you know. And I always try to explain to patients that if you have bad bugs in your gut, you don't really want to take a prebiotic and get them to grow. So you might want to take a pure probiotic first and get good bugs in your gut.
I'm disappointed in you, Dr. Tracy. They're critters. They're critters today.
Critters.
Thank you.
Lots of good critters versus bad critters.
Well, and that brings up the point that, you know, most people have bacteria or critter overgrowth in their GI tract. You know, like I said at the beginning, 3 to 4 pounds of them. Not all of them are bad, but most of them are. And they need to clean that out and to get rid of some of that before we start putting in a lot more probiotic.
That's frightening. 3 to 4 pounds. Some interesting information with Dr. Betty, clinical nutritionist. She's going to be joining us in the next segment as well. We're going to continue this conversation, get more into prebiotics in the next segment as well. Check out their website in the meantime, peaksofhealth.com. Give them a call right now for a free 15-minute consultation, 727-826-0838. More with Dr. Betty and Dr. Tracy on the Dr. Tracy Show next. Dr. Tracy Show, Aaron Jacobson with Dr. Tracy, as we always join you on Sundays. And if you want to check out their website, peaksofhealth.com, it's always good. I have it when we're doing the show. I love to have the website up because there's always some great information, whether it be on thyroid, weight loss, diabetes, some great stuff in there. Today, we're joined by Dr. Betty Wedman. Dr. Betty, we like to call her a clinical nutritionist. Thank you for joining us again, Dr. Betty.
Nice to be here, Aaron.
And we've had Dr. Betty before, and she is always great fun when we have her in studio. And today we are talking about gut health. And right now we're going to get into diets for the gut. And what are some good diets for gut health? Let's start with you, Dr. Betty.
Well, of course, that eliminates simple carbohydrates, including sugar. That means your breads and your crackers and your snack foods and all those sweetened beverages that everybody loves. That feeds the bad bacteria or critters, as you call it, and the yeast.
What does the sugar do to the gut? Why is that bad?
Oh, sugar is just inflames and causes the inflammatory response. So that sets up, you know, a lot of pain and neurological problems because you have just as many nerves or neurons in your gut as you do in your brain. But people don't stop and think about it that way.
Yeah, and actually, if you look at the structure of the nerve system of the gut, it is identical to the nervous system of the brain. That's why they're so interlinked. That's why, you know, if you are really anxious, you can have a lot of nausea or GI effects because they interlink with each other. And, you know, when we're talking about just pure sugar going into the intestinal system, it gets absorbed almost instantaneously. And so that's going to spike your sugar. It's going to increase your insulin. And remember, your brain's energy source is sugar.
I think it's hard to tell people to just cut out the sugar completely for some people that have that sweet tooth. What's the, you know, what's an okay amount of sugar to intake?
Well, that gets back to personalizing the diet for the person. Now, yes, there are some people it's all or nothing. I mean, for some people, you have to take it away totally or else a little bit, and then they can binge off. The other thing is that when you have bad bacteria levels in, or these critters in your GI tract, and you begin to deprive them for a day or two because you're being really a good angel, and then all of a sudden you decide that you're going to eat a slice of bread, you've refed those guys, and then the craving starts all over again.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things we find with, you know, the digestive tract. It's really tricky that way. You know, a lot of times when we start that diet, we will deprive them of a lot of their sugar and their breads and everything else, and, you know, their dairy for the first few days to kind of kill everything off. One of the things that, you know, we can go into is when we actually tell them to, when they can actually start eating a little bit of it again, if they combine it and just don't eat pure sugar, you know, what can we combine it with to slow down that process so it doesn't affect it as much?
Well, I tell everybody they have to have protein at every meal. Some kind of protein will stop the absorption of the simple carbohydrate or sugar. And so if you keep that in mind, whether that protein is a protein powder, a whey powder, that's still not as good as if it was chicken or a scrambled egg.
Well, let's talk. You said chicken and then you went to scrambled egg. Let's talk about that. So breakfast, get your breakfast. How do you get your protein? What's the best simple way?
Oh, simple way is some scrambled egg or a couple slices of bacon.
Oh, perfect. Now let's go to lunch.
Lunch would be a leftover piece of chicken from the night before or some tuna fish.
Nice chicken cutlet or some tuna fish. Now, dinner, maybe dinner. Something a little more substantial?
Oh, yeah. You could have, you know, some lean meat or some turkey.
And Dr. Tracy, we've talked before about getting important to get 5 meals a day, something around that, 5 or 6 meals a day. With those snacks, should you be getting protein in the snacks
yes.
as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, we always add protein with every single, you know, meal. It doesn't have to be a lot. You know, for a snack, I just say 1 ounce, you know, protein. Mm-hmm. You don't need a whole lot for that. But you do want to put some source of protein. It stabilizes the blood sugar, you know, with that whole system. So that's one of the things we want to do is keep that blood sugar as stable as we can throughout the day.
Or one of the things that I tell people is to use some goat cheese on some rice cracker or something of that nature. You've got the protein in the goat cheese, but then the rice cracker slows down that sugar
absorption. I think one of the hardest things for people is to make a diet, change your diet, and actually stick to that diet. It's easy to do it for a day, and it's even, you know, it's harder to do it for a week, but people get away with it. And then by the time it becomes a month, a lot of people just throw it by the wayside. How do you get on a good diet?
Well, one, I rarely tell my patients they're going on a diet. I more emphasize, and Dr. Betty and I both do this, that it is a lifestyle of eating. You know, it's not 100%, you know, other than Dr. Betty being 100% there on her diet. The rest of us may cheat 10% or 20% of the time.
Well, where would my credibility be if I was overweight?
Exactly. You know, so I tell people, you know, it's you can't stick to it 100% of the time, but it's a lifestyle. So you're staying healthy and making healthy choices. And we teach them those healthy choices so that, you know, they can do this for the rest of their life.
Do you give them like a check? Because people hear that sometimes and they say, yes, I've heard that before, but do you give them a checklist? Do you really? Because I know, Dr. Tracy, one of the things is trust, and you get really close with the patients. How do you build that where you really can get them to change that diet?
We really talk to them. You know, Betty does the same thing. A lot of times I will refer them to her to sit down one-on-one, you know, with that person to go over a specific diet for them, to teach them, you know, because of course, you know, spending an hour with me versus, you know, an hour with a nutritionalist helps them a lot, you know, and it's about making choices. It's about give and take. You know, it's about finding out, you know, the trust buildup is finding out what your patient will do and getting to know them week after week to find out what they will compromise with, you know, and it is about compromise sometimes. You know, if the patient absolutely will not give something up, okay, can we cut it in half though, you know, and then start working that way.
Or I'll give them a diet. As an example, for 4 or 5 days, a breakfast, lunch, dinner, and snacks. And, you know, that gets them started. But then the next time, they just need to really know what about choices. Because, you know, you don't eat the same thing over and over all the time. But if people stop and think about it, what gets them in trouble is they eat the same stuff over and over and over. And the same bad food choices.
What if you have a bad diet, a very poor diet, and you feel something like a chronic fatigue or something like that, and you know it's because of your nutrition, but you really don't know what it's like to feel healthy. You just haven't felt it in so long. When you do change that diet, how long would it take someone who has that chronic fatigue and doesn't really even know that it's the nutrition that's hurting them? How long would it take them when they get on a balanced diet to really start feeling good again?
Well, one of the things is we do have some very good information about cleaning up the gut, as we're talking about today. And once we clean up that gut for 4 or 5 days, then we put them on free amino acids. And we change the tryptophan level in their brain. They sleep different. They feel different. They know the difference. Within a week, if a person is doing it right, they know a difference.
So five to 7 days, you clean the gut, and it doesn't matter who it is. It's clean.
Yep. Yeah, you can detox the person, and there are ways to do different detoxes. Now, let's explain, you know, because we talked about tryptophan right there. Mm-hmm. Why is that tryptophan very important for that mood elevation?
Well, tryptophan is then converted to serotonin, which changes your brainwave pattern, your sleep pattern, your mood pattern. That makes a great deal of difference of how you feel about yourself.
And one of the things we found when serotonin drops in that person, I mean, everybody knows about serotonin's relationship to depression, but it also gives us carbohydrate cravings when it's low. It's one of the ways that we elevate serotonin in our body is through carbs. So that comfort food we always want is our own way of self-medicating to get the serotonin level up there. So if we can clean up the gut and get it to start doing it itself, then they don't have those cravings so much anymore.
And in the bariatric patients I see, that's what we have to do in order for them to be successful, even though they've signed in for the surgery.
Yeah, and some of our really severe malabsorptive patients, one of the things, you know, where you said, how can we get them feeling better faster? That is where, you know, Dr. Betty and I both will use IV nutrition to get that into their body, because it's a catch-22. How do we heal the gut if we can't get the nutrition in there that they need to heal with.
Well, and they don't realize that it's the lack of the amino acids that's causing the fatigue. It's causing their gut not to rebuild itself. It's causing their muscle laxation, or they don't feel strong enough to do anything. And that's just all health from the GI tract.
Yeah, so this plays a huge role in everything, you know. If we don't fix the intestinal tract, that's my opinion anyway, when I look at a patient that has a bad GI tract, if we don't fix that first, in a lot of cases, we're not going to fix much of anything.
Right. We can see them for headaches and for, fatigue or just really all kinds of, issues. But the GI tract is number one.
So you start with the intestinal. And if somebody's listening right now and they say, well, how do I know right away if my intestines are, or, you know, something's really wrong? What's the first sign?
Well, how many bowel movements they have a day.
What's normal? We've talked about this a little bit before, but
1 to 2. Form stools, someone who goes every 2 to 3 days, the GI tract is a big problem. That's a lot of toxins that are building up, but that's a big problem that something's not working right.
Now, I know it's a difficult conversation for some to hear when we're talking about stool, but it's an important one to have. You said solid stool. Mm-hmm. Elaborate on that. A lot of people, what's a solid stool? I mean, not everyone has solid stool. How do you know if that's something that you have to get checked out?
Well, if it's a loose stool, it's not diarrhea. Diarrhea is, for most people, means that I've got a problem. But if it's a loose stool, that means the transit time is still too fast. And that means that food is going through too fast for nutrients to be absorbed. So that's what a form stool means, that things have slowed down enough and then eliminated once a day.
And definitely somebody out there, if you're having this issue, it's something you definitely want to get help on. Give Dr. Tracy a call. Dr. Tracy can help you with this. 727-826-0838. Call her for a 15-minute consultation. You'll get it for free. So take advantage of that. 727-826-0838. Check out their website as well. Some great stuff on there. Peaksofhealth.com. In studio today with Dr. Tracy and myself, Aaron Jacobson, Dr. Betty, clinical nutritionist. We're having a great time with her talking about gut health and how important it is. So we're going to talk more about gut health on the Dr. Tracy Show next. Time goes by fast when you're having a great time, and they always seem to go by fast all the time here on the Dr. Tracy Show. Aaron Jacobson with Dr. Tracy and Dr. Betty joining us in studio today. We've had her on before, a great guest. We had to have her in again, clinical nutritionist. Thanks again for joining us, Dr. Betty.
Nice to be here, Aaron.
And today we are talking about gut health on the Dr. Tracy Show. But first, as I always say, check out the website. I'm on it now. When we have the conversation, it's always great to use it as a reference, as a guide, peaksofhealth.com. That's peaksofhealth.com. Check that out. Give them a call, too, to get your free 15-minute consultation. They're not going to try to sell you anything. You're just going to get some free information. 727-826-0838. You won't regret that decision. So today we are talking about diets for the gut health. It's very important to keep that gut healthy. As you said, we're talking about how important it is to keep the brain healthy. And obviously the gut had such a connectivity to that brain.
Exactly. And one of the things a lot of people are hearing about in the, news and, and all the websites and everything is about gluten. And I don't think a lot of people even understand what gluten is. So can we explain that?
Well, gluten is a protein in grain flours. So it's used for bread, flour. It's in many different grain products. So that's why the sensitivities, are not for rice. And, that's probably the most less gluten of all grains.
Now, why are we having such a gluten issue? Because, 40, 50 years ago, we didn't have this problem. Nearly what we're hearing about it now with all these patients that are starting to get gluten sensitive.
Not only that, if you go to a restaurant, a lot of restaurants now will have gluten for the menu. You can either get it regular or gluten free,
Exactly. We're having so many more patients becoming celiac these days, too. Mm-hmm.
Well, and you can even go on a cruise and request gluten-free, and you used to be able to do that in an airline, but not any longer. But, with gluten, you have a couple things. Number one, you could have celiac disease, which is a disease that was discovered in the Second World War with a group of young little children, and they thrived because they couldn't eat bread, and they lived off of rice porridge instead, and that's how celiac disease was discovered.
The way things have been going, you would have thought it was discovered 5 years ago. I mean,
and so people who think that they might have celiac disease really need the genetic testing to be able to tell that for sure. You know, the gold standard is a small intestinal biopsy, but let me tell you, from a person who's had six of them, that's really not the gold standard. So you also have one phase of that to be gluten sensitivity. And those people are sensitive to gluten. So if they go on a gluten-free diet, that means no grains and only rice and some quinoa, then you know, they will do better. But that's a gluten sensitivity. That doesn't mean they have the autoimmune disease called celiac disease.
Yeah. And one of the things we're finding is, you know, that I found anyway in research is gluten is so much more profound in our diet. We eat so much more of it than we ever did before.
Yes.
It's in every food source you find, where before it was usually mainly the breads and baked goods. So people are getting so much more exposed to it. And we cannot break this down. You know, right. The human gut, anybody cannot break this down. Where in some cases we weren't seeing patients with issues until their fourth or fifth decade. Now we're seeing young children with it because they're exposed to such early ages.
Yes, we talk about gluten, but it's really a lectin sensitivity for the celiac person. And if you wanted to Google that, that's L-E-C-T-I-N-S, okay? Lectins. And lectins are a component that your GI tract had to learn to tolerate. And for a lot of people who especially 24/7 are eating these gluten-containing flour products that are binding meat and chicken together. They're in every snack food, things of that nature. The exposure is very great.
Yeah, one of the things that we're finding with all this gluten in our system is that it is inducing a lot of inflammation in the gut. And with that inflammation is going to come disease, autoimmune issues. We don't know of one autoimmune disease that is not linked into a gluten sensitivity where we have to take our patients off of gluten. A lot of people with muscle and joint pains, you know, we take them off of gluten in their diet and their pain goes away. And it's just amazing.
Yes, and, you know, inflammation throughout the body. But remember, the largest single organ of our body is our GI tract. And so if that's inflamed, you're going to have that inflammation in the brain for headaches and brain fog. You're going to have joint pains. You're going to have, you know, problems throughout your body.
It's an interesting discussion to have because, like Dr. Tracy said, we're hearing so much now about celiac disease and gluten-free diets. Dr. Tracy, we always love to have an in-the-news segment with you before we head on out of here. So what's in the news this week?
Well, since we're talking about things of inflammation, this was in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. And the title read, Sugary Drinks Significantly Raise Cardiovascular Risk Factors. So what they're talking
shocker.
About. Shocker. Shocker, yes. What they were talking about, you know, but what was interesting about this is this was young people. This was young, healthy people between 18 and 40. They did this study on not older people with cardiovascular risk. And they actually only had them take the sugary drinks for 2 weeks. So we're talking about high fructose corn syrup for 2 weeks in different levels. 0% for the, you know, baseline. 10%, 17.5%, and 25%, depending on the soda and what they were drinking. And within those 2 weeks, they showed a significant rise in LDL cholesterol. They showed a significant rise in triglycerides in these patients. And that was healthy young people.
What does that mean, though, when you say triglycerides? What's happening to them?
Well, triglyceride is, you know, what we use when we produce a fat in our blood, you know, and that's how we store a lot of our fat in triglycerides. But again, if they're in the bloodstream, that is highly inflammatory to the body. That is actually a precursor to insulin resistance and diabetes. So when people have high triglycerides, we keep on thinking that they're starting to become insulin resistant. And so that, and again, what was incredible about the study is these were healthy individuals to start with, and within 2 weeks, they started changing their blood system.
But, you know, the elevation of the triglycerides for anybody that's listening means body fat or adipose tissue.
It's how we store our fat. More triglycerides, more fat storage.
Hey, guys, what a great show as always. But Dr. Betty, when you come in, I keep saying it, you bring so much flavor and spice to the show. So we always appreciate that. Thank you for coming in today.
Thank you.
And Dr. Tracy, we had a great week as always and a great show, and we'll do it again next week. Today we were talking about the gut health, and we kept saying critters in the gut and how they affect your gut, and that was the theme of the day, critters in our stomach. So Dr. Tracy, thank you again. Have a great week.
Well, thank you. You too.
Everyone, check out their website. This is the Dr. Tracy Show, peaksofhealth.com. While you're away for the week, make sure to check out that website and take advantage of their free 15-minute consultation by giving them a call, 727-826-0838. I want to thank our guest again today, Dr. Betty, clinical nutritionist, always a blast. And you guys, thank you guys for being here today. Have a great week. Next time on the Dr. Tracy Show.